Om Shanti. Good morning. So warm welcome to Brother Charlie. I think everyone knows Brother Charlie. Is there anyone who doesn't know Brother Charlie? We all know Brother Charlie. One of the first double foreigners to emerge, sustained and nurtured by Daddy Janki for many, many years in London, and now the national coordinator for Australia. But I think we all appreciate Charlie by his lightness, his very warm nature, and just that feeling of an elder brother that always very lovingly creates a very close feeling of family. And I think that's something we all appreciate from Charlie by. He's our big brother and our friend. So looking forward to this morning's topic. I think subtlety and the subtlety of the intellect is something we all are feeling is we need to develop further, particularly as we reach this point in the confluence age. And so looking forward to your exploration of that. Thank you.
Om Shanti. Good morning and welcome to everyone in the hall. There's not so many of us, but I'd also like to welcome all the Zoomers, those who are watching in different corners of the world, because we have a really wonderful team. Thanks to Dorothy, Pratibha and everybody who are not only arranging things for us here, but those who want to can watch in all corners of the world. So on behalf of all of you, I'm going to give them a wave and a welcome. So one thing I've really felt this time, and I wonder whether you are feeling it too, that since I came to this divine mountain where God incarnates, more than ever, and I must have been here close to, I don't know how many times, 80, 90 times, maybe more, the contrast of the atmosphere here and the atmosphere out there, how great is it? Do you notice? It's incredible, isn't it? It's really like we're on another planet here, I think. And it's just so light, so sweet. And yet we know that around the world so many of our brothers and sisters are, when I say that, the human family, are really suffering a lot, but we really have a lot of mercy and good wishes. You know, in my Brahman journey, I think I've learned that everything depends on the intellect. The intellect is that magic thing that when it opens up, it's like I enter a completely different perception of the self and life and everything. And all of us here and those of us online, when we walk into Baba's center or whenever we did the course, and we listen to Baba's introduction, it's the intellect that has a realization. It's the intellect that recognizes and understands. And almost as soon as the intellect recognizes Baba, recognizes God, I start this incredible journey of self-transformation. Because I realize that my intellect has lost all its power. My intellect has become gross. And now I really want to step back into that subtle intellect once again. And when we come into the Copper Age, once again, the intellect, because the perception that I inherit is that I'm a temporary body. And it's like a veil comes over the intellect. I enter a a false perception of absolutely everything. And because of that false perception, I enter into the experience of peacelessness and sorrow and unhappiness. You know, there's so many ways of looking at the cycle, but one of the ways is that as the intellect, the quality of the intellect really influences really the state of the soul. So everything really depends on the intellect. And one of the first things we learn in Brahman life is the anatomy of the soul. And something which I heard only recently has really sort of got me thinking and experiencing, not just thinking, but experiencing. Such a simple thing, but you know, the journey to soul consciousness, we're constantly learning and transforming that learning into a feeling. And someone was just telling me that this body is made, science believes, of 40 trillion cells. That's unimaginable, don't you think? 40 trillion little building blocks that make up this thing that you're seeing. And the human soul is more subtle than even one of those 40 trillion building blocks. Doesn't it sort of give you an incredible sort of insight into who I really am, the subtlety of the self? And Baba. Baba is also the most subtle being. And in a way, what quality of intellect do I need to really be able to not just know and believe, but to taste that subtle self and really have a relationship with another being so subtle? It's something which is incredible. But I've always loved the analogy of the soul, that I think of the theatre, and the mind is like a screen. You know, when the screen comes down here, there's a big screen. And I really love that all the data that I see, that I taste, that I hear, is thrown up on that screen. All the information of life at a particular moment. And the intellect is like you sitting in the theatre. You're observing all the data that comes onto the screen of your mind. And you then assess all that data. The intellect goes in a minute. It's like instant. You assess that data, the personalities, the atmosphere, and then you decide something. You perform an action. You speak. You do something or you don't do something. And then that is recorded in my subconscious. In a way, my sanskaras are a record of all the decisions my intellect takes. I carry an entire sort of story of all my past decisions that I've been carrying in my subconscious. So this incredible sort of journey internally, that constantly, at every millisecond, the mind is receiving information, the intellect is observing it, trying to make sense of it, and then responding. And it almost all happens absolutely instantly. How important then, what is that point of awareness that makes me make the right decisions or makes me make the wrong decision? It really depends on the quality of my intellect, the quality of my understanding. And you know, how many titles does Baba have? Thousands. You know, someone once gave me a beautiful picture in calligraphy, which is like of all the names of God for Muslims, for Islam. There's hundreds of them just for one religion. But one of Baba's really fascinating titles is the intellect of the wise. And Baba, this most subtle of subtle beings, you know, so subtle, has an intellect that eternally retains all truth, is never, ever adulterated, tainted, or influenced in any way. And then when you think this incredibly subtle being enters the body of Brahma at the end of the cycle, and this intellect that's never been tainted, every single one of us from Brahma Baba down, all our intellects have been tainted, have been influenced, have been affected. Baba starts to share his intellect, what is retained in his intellect, his perception of absolutely everything. And, you know, I think we tend to think we always see reality. But as you know, we create our own reality. I mean, have you ever been with anyone and you see the same scene, and how you see it and they see it is like a million miles apart? Who's had that experience? I think everyone. Who's been? I've been in a meeting, and you know, with people, and I've come out and said, "What a great meeting," and the other person said, "That was the worst meeting I've ever been to." You know? Because we all have our own perception of reality, even though we make this assumption, the way I see reality is really right. And I remember my sister-in-law telling me once that she and my brother, they had a lot of friends, and they used to go to a lot of dinner parties. And when they would drive home after an evening of meeting their friends and so on, my sister-in-law always used to like to debrief on what happened around the dinner table. And she said to me, sometimes my perception of what happened and compared to my brother's was so different. She used to say to my brother's name was Richard, "Richard, did we go to the same dinner party?" He saw it in such a different way, completely and utterly different. And this is the wonder of the intellect at the end of the cycle, that it's constructed from so many flavors of, you know, our mood and our emotions and our sanskaras and our past history and our karmic accounts, and then all the external factors that are sort of swirling around and constantly influencing how I'm seeing everything around me. And how do I really know the quality of my intellect? If this life is really the life to attain a divine intellect, a subtle intellect, to really attain an intellect that's like the same window as Baba's, so I start to see and interpret life like Baba, how can I tell, you know, how I'm going? And for me, you know, Baba often gives the labels, doesn't he? The Tamo Pradhan, the Tamo, the Raja, the Sato Pradhan. He often refers to that in terms of the quality of the intellect. And I feel my reactions to people really reveal where my intellect is at in this spiritual journey. And if I reject somebody, I remember Daddy Jenki once said that the most tamo pradhan of all sanskaras is to reject another. If I hold a grudge, you know, or if I don't speak to somebody, you know, I just absolutely ignore them, or I can't forgive somebody, I would say it's a little thing that's showing me that I still have remnants of that tamo pradhan nature of my intellect. It's not about the other person. The other person's an instrument to reveal to me who I am. Yes, their behavior might be like this. Yes, their behavior might be like that. But my reaction to that behavior is revealing to me the influences on my intellect. And if I reject, hold grudges, then maybe I'm still carrying a bit of that tamo nature, tamo pradhan nature. A tamo intellect, I would say, is an intellect that's constantly critical, is always finding fault. I might not say much, I may even have a little smile on my face, but the intellect is always finding fault. Or an intellect that's so easily upset. A little tiny baby thing happens and I make it into such a big deal, I get so upset and disturbed. A Rajo intellect is really about preferences. I like you, but I prefer you. I like it done this way. I don't like it done that way. So I'm really into my preferences. A satto intellect. When the intellect starts to become satto, that's really when I see virtue in others. I have good wishes and pure feelings for others. I can give respect. I can give love. Excuse me. I can have mercy for others around me. And a satto pradhan intellect is really an intellect like the intellect of the wise. And that's an intellect that even if others put me down, even if others defame me, that it doesn't affect me. A bit like Shiv Baba, sometimes he says, no one's been defamed, you know, in the cycle more than me. So it's not about other people. It's about observing my reactions to people. It's probably a bit of an indicator of where have I come from, a gross intellect to a subtle intellect. And if I'm still sometimes rejecting, getting easily upset, etc., still telling me I have remnants of the old and I haven't really traveled to the new. But the intellect is really a fascinating part of the anatomy. And when you think of this incredibly subtle soul, to me the intellect is a number of things, and Baba uses different language for it. It is a vessel, a container. And I like to think of it like that in a sense. It's a container where I hold the understanding of who I am, you know, what is reality, what is really happening around me. In a sense, it's a container that holds my sense of self, my sense of reality. And at the beginning of the cycle, my sense of self, I knew I was a soul. It was a natural thing. And my reality was that I will die and take rebirth. It's an absolutely natural process. I have no fear of that process. But when I come further down the cycle, by the end of the cycle, what happens? That my sense of self is so tarnished that my intellect looks down on myself. Often I will feel a victim. You know, I'm convinced it's reality. I am a victim, but actually it's because my intellect has been tainted. That's how I feel. And we all know that the ultimate state of when the intellect does become tamopradhan, all my self-value is lost. And even as we know as Brahmins, this journey to genuinely step back into self-value, which is really stepping back into a subtle intellect, it really does take time. And so I would say that, you know, the intellect is like a vessel. And what we are really doing is removing the container full of the knowledge that when I walk in Baba's door, and beginning to replace it with God's truth in that container. So even Baba uses the language, doesn't it, that it needs a golden vessel to hold the lioness's milk. It needs a really divine intellect to really hold God's truth. And in a sense, our whole journey to a subtle intellect is removing the old story, the old perception I've been holding, and really starting to look through the window of Baba's perception. And so that's really the first thing I would say. The intellect is like a vessel that is holding my understanding of who I am and my understanding of life. And really what I'm doing is removing the old understanding and trying to fill in that vessel, God's understanding. The second thing I often feel, and more recently I've been feeling, is that the intellect is like a traveller. Who's a traveller at heart here? Oh, not that many, I'm surprised. I thought Brahmins were the great travellers. Because, you know, what I've observed is the intellect is beyond time and space. You know, in this incredibly subtle soul, the intellect, just sort of visualize you're sitting here, but your intellect in a split second faster than time travels back in time or travels an infinite distance. Your intellect can travel to the person beside you or back to your country in the same time. And it's an incredible process that this traveling intellect. Why? Because it's searching, it's seeking, something is lost. I honestly believe the reason, the hardest thing in meditation, when we sit to meditate, what happens? The intellect travels outside. Does that happen? Does it happen? I think it happens. Is there anyone it doesn't happen to? So you sit down and your aim is to remember Baba and you travel back to your center. You travel to a personality, you travel to something. And each time you do, what I'm observing is in an instant you connect with wherever you travel to, the person, the memory, a place, something you have to do. The instant you connect, you are influenced by that connection. And whatever influences you, you have a feeling or an experience inside. And so this intellect, sometimes it's like I sort of visualize, it's plugging in. It plugs in there, it plugs in there, it plugs in there, it plugs in there. It's on this constant search, plugging in. And whatever I plug into, I'm influenced by. So to become subtle, Baba says, children, remember me alone. When I, the subtle thread goes beyond the material world, beyond bodily beings, and I connect with the being who's as subtle as me, Baba. I'm influenced by Baba, his virtues, his state. And it's like I download Baba into me and that feeling inside of me. But when my intellect travels to people, and this has been our habit for half a cycle, and really I've been observing, it's so profoundly deep, whether I'm attracted or not attracted, we keep traveling to people. And sometimes we even dwell on a certain person because of their behavior. It's almost like my intellect is a magnet that gets stuck. I can't pull it back. I don't have the power of knowledge. I dwell on it, and it's almost like I put myself under the karmic influence of others in this sense. And what happens is that, you know, I feel really empty and flat. And if even the intellect travels to the self, my past, my weaknesses, my mistakes, lowest vibration, why does Baba say, children, remember me alone? You know, really in a sense that when the intellect travels, and it will travel, when it tastes the love of God, then it's really attracted to that destination. And in a sense, this is the journey, isn't it? When the intellect travels to a person, what I'm starting to feel that this effort is really paying attention, just attention. Where does my intellect travel to in that split second? And I've been sharing, sometimes I wake up for Amrit Vela, I'm sure you must do this sometimes, and I have such a deep thought that I'm going to really remember one Baba. And then in 1.2 seconds, you've travelled somewhere. Who's had that experience? It's not even to a bad place. And this is the incredible nature of the subtle intellect. And this is where this life is, effort to me is just, it's not about being tense, but just observing where the intellect travels to and gently keep taking it back to one, taking it back to one, taking it back to one. Because really, when the intellect gets caught in these old stories, in these old things, then, you know, I come under those influences and then I don't feel happy. Really, for me, I really feel these days that if I'm not feeling that good, if I'm not feeling happy, there's only one question to ask myself. What have I been remembering? What have I plugged my intellect to? where have I traveled and put myself under the influence? So the intellect is a vessel that holds God's truth. It's a traveler that's always searching, seeking and plugging in, because ultimately it's been looking for truth and love and purity and power, the destination. But thirdly, the intellect is like a lens, which is the sort of the filter that I understand and perceive everything around me. You know, it's like I wear, in the golden age, it's like I don't wear glasses. You know, I see reality. When I come to the copper age, I start to wear slightly tinted glasses. You know how some people have slightly tinted glasses? So my vision, my perception of people, myself, what's going on, is slightly affected because my intellect has become body conscious. So it's slightly affected by my ego, by my dependence, by my attraction to name and form. But when I get to the Iron Age, it's almost like I'm wearing dark glasses, you know. My vision is 100% distorted. It is so deeply distorted because I have adopted the dark glasses that I'm a temporary body and I'm all the labels. And the ramifications, the sort of the cascading effect of that falsehood, that I really, this subtle, subtle soul, smaller than a cell, now identifies with this huge and gross thing. It cascades into how I feel, my relationships, absolutely each and every bit of my life. And we know that when this begins to happen, I compare myself with others. I feel inferior. There's a whole lot of things. I start to chase after superficial things in life for temporary highs, you know? I do things, I eat things, I have relationships, I have friendships, and I get these temporary highs. And I become even addicted to those temporary highs. We all know the sort of the dark sunglasses, where the intellect is completely distorted. My perception, my judgments, my understanding of most things is really not accurate at all. And so the intellect is like a lens that I'm observing reality through. And there's four lenses that I think we can look through. And the first one is really like the gross lens, like I was saying, the lens when I think I'm a body. And this lens is driven, this intellect, this perception is driven by my desires and my karmic story. It's almost like the poor intellect has become so weak that my whole sort of perception of everything is just driven by my desires and, you know, my karmic story. And how does this influence my Brahman life? Because we're here because we want to go return to that divine and subtle intellect. We're on the journey. We're all on the journey. But I feel the remnants of that gross intellect, even though I am a Brahman and practicing, still sit with me. And so hence when I'm wearing the dark sunglasses of this sort of gross intellect, you know, I'm so delicate. I'm so sensitive. If I'm still really delicate and sensitive, the little tiny things disturb me and upset me, know my intellect is still sort of, you know, wearing the dark sunglasses, still in this sort of gross perception of things. And even sometimes I think our attitude to service, because in the Lokic world we kept doing things to get a temporary high. You know how life, you go out, you have a bit of fun, you get high and you come back again. It's just this constant. This is what addiction really is. Even I think we use service to get a quick fix, a quick high, you know. I get a bit of praise, I get a bit of success, I get a bit of something. And that's why some of us, really service becomes such a big thing for us, because still the intellect has some of this growth quality, and I keep wanting these temporary hits to feel better about myself. And so this is, you know, the oldest lens, or the more recent lens perhaps, is this gross perception, when I really think I'm just a temporary body and all the labels of the body. And then this very gross perception, and this is an intellect full of sorrow. And an intellect full of sorrow, what does Baba call them? A stone intellect, doesn't he, you know? A stone intellect can't absorb anything. A stone intellect has been so, it's had so much sorrow, it sort of just can't absorb any truth much. Or sometimes Baba calls a baby intellect. Have you heard Baba call a baby intellect? They're the intellects that are so delicate, so sensitive. You know, Brahma Baba wasn't very merciful on children who were too delicate. He would say feeling is like a flu and, you know, we should grow up. Well, sometimes Baba calls a buffalo intellect. Have you heard him call it a buffalo intellect? Which is a very stubborn intellect. That intellect, I'm right. You know, I'm right. The way I see life is right. That's to me the ultimate state of ego, of intellect. My intellect is so under the influence of my ego. The way I see things, the way I do things is the right way. So the first lens is this sort of gross lens, you can say, when the intellect is in that gross state. The second, I would say, is a creative lens. And I really believe that a lot of us on our journey to find truth, you know, we were the ones every lifetime, you know, the ones who woke up first, went to ring the bells in the temples, and, you know, we've tried so hard to find truth. And yet sometimes all the rituals and all the things, you know, really became boring, incredibly boring. And so the arts became a way of expressing our spirituality in a, which is a really lovely thing to do. So that creative intellect is the intellect of a musician, an artist, even a scientist. You know, the gross intellect just is only the reality is the external world. The creative intellect is thinking. It's still in the material world, but it's creating music, it's creating art, it's creating here. Which is a lovely thing in a way. But sometimes I think, how does this influence my Brahman life? I think sometimes, you know, when we're new, how enthusiastic are we? We're the first one in Amrit Vela, we're the first one in the Mauli, we do everything. But after a while, you know how you start off? You're just running, you're sprinting, and then you start to jog a bit. Then what happens? You start to walk. Then you start to saunter and, oh yeah, I've heard that before. Oh yeah, I know this. Boredom can set in. Boredom can set in a big way. Boredom is a really, I would say, gross state of body consciousness too. And so sometimes, even within Brahman life, when we get bored with doing our own work of going deep into knowledge and experimenting in yoga, we start to look to the arts in a way to get our newness in Brahman life. In a way, a creative intellect is an intellect that always wants newness. Newness is good, but sometimes we just want external newness, entertainment and this sort of thing. The third lens that I think is sort of our intellects have been carrying, there's the gross lens, the creative one, is the devotional lens. And that's a really fascinating one because that lens is really, you know, we've been searching. And for so many lifetimes, we've been searching for truth, searching for meaning. And when we went into the churches, into the mosques, into the temples, into wherever we went, there's usually, not in all of them, but in most of them, a bodily being there. There's Krishna, there's Christ, there's Ganesh or Hanuman or whoever, a saint, a sage, a guru. And in a sense, this devotional intellect is so sincere, and yet it's driven by name and form. Name and form. And how does this devotional part of my intellect affect even Brahman life? Even within the Brahman family, you know, Shiv Baba says, remember me alone. I, that subtle, subtle, subtle being, remember that subtle, subtle, subtle supreme being. And yet, Brahma Baba and the daddies, what great souls they are. But often we, even Brahma Baba, when he was alive, he didn't like photos taken of him, because he knew that this life, for the subtle intellect to really grow, we have to go beyond all name and form. And yet, even within our Brahman family, sometimes we sort of see a special teacher or a special instrument, and we get a little bit impressed by them. One of the mulis which I've really loved, and I keep in my box of special mulis, I've lost my box recently, was when Baba was talking about purity. And Baba was really saying that, you know, the reason we get defeated in purity is that when we get impressed by someone's virtues, someone's personality, someone's teaching, they're a great teacher, someone gives me love, all this sort of thing. And Baba was then quoting us, oh, I really like this person, they're such a great teacher, they give me love, they give me support. And then you think, well, what's wrong with that? But you know what Baba went on to say? What happens is, we subtly put this individual who has a name and form, a bodily being, which is the addiction of my intellect for half a cycle, on a pedestal. And Baba said, subtly, Shiv Baba moves out of the picture, and that individual is in front of me. And sometimes I think even we bring this sanskara from, you know, our bhakti days into the Brahman family, because we can see people and we can hear them. And yet really my experience is that what I learned from the life of Brahma Baba was that, you know, he was really remembering Shiv Baba. And ultimately we can learn from each other. We can appreciate each other. But the real Raj Yogi is the one that develops such a subtle intellect. I can remember Shiv Baba and feel love and feeling from Shiv Baba. And the more my intellect is still under the influence of name and form, you know, bodily beings, even images, however virtuous they are. Because when people do remember Krishna and Christ, they get something. They do get something, but it's temporary. And Baba's taking us to the highest quality of intellect. The intellect that can really connect with the being that's beyond all images, so to speak, just the image of the soul. And I think it's a really, really subtle thing in the journey that, you know, this is an amazing Brahman family. My experience is just incredible, the quality of people. To live in this family, appreciate them, see their virtues, but not be impressed. That is real purity, actually. And that's why Baba said the reason we get defeated in purity is when we put someone on a pedestal, whoever that may be, whoever that senior may be. We respect them, but we don't get impressed. That's the devotional intellect. The devotional intellect is driven by name and form and getting impressed. And that's really not a subtle intellect still. Because the divine intellect, I would say the subtle intellect, is the intellect that's really driven by three things. One, all relationships with that most subtle of all being, the intellect of what the wise. The more I go forth in my Brahman life, this is probably the most crucial point for the soul to really move forward, to have all relationships. And you know, often I think this traveling intellect, we go to Shiv Baba and I get that subtle power. I come under God's influence. And then in a millisecond I go to a human being and I'm slightly irritated. And it's almost like the power then drains out. Then I go back to Baba. Then I go to another person. I'm slightly impressed. And so, and then sometimes we think, hey, Baba, I'm a Brahman and yet I'm not really feeling that I'm moving forward. I'm really progressing as I really should. And this, you know, sometimes I think that all relationships with one, we asked Daddy Prakashmani why she became the instrument of the Yajna. And she said because she's had this sanskara right from the beginning. And to me, this is the first prerequisite for an intellect that becomes like the one that's the intellect of the wise. It becomes so subtle, so clean. The second is the second thing that a divine intellect, a subtle intellect is driven by is Srimat. I never see Srimat as rules and regulations. To me, Srimat is not rules and regulations. Srimat is like a deep code of truth. A deep code of truth that if I follow, it will give me the gift of the subtle intellect back. And one way I look at Srimat these days is that from the beginning of the Copper Age, I put myself under hundreds of influences of gurus, of teachers, of saints, of sages, of cultures, of society, what they expect, of parents, of so many things, you know? And all these things have polluted my intellect. And all of them have influenced, excuse me, my perception of everything happening around me. What does it mean to follow Srimat? It means to put myself under the influence of one and one alone. It's absolutely the passage to a more subtle intellect. So if I remember one and I really realize I listen to everybody, their views, but ultimately I listen, you know, to God and what God says, because that's the intellect that's never been tainted. And that's when I really value every direction from Baba. It heals this sort of gross intellect, this creative intellect, this devotional intellect. It really heals that so that I can have the subtlety of intellect like Baba. You know, sometimes I think a subtle intellect can, when they even meet another human soul, can tune into them. Can absolutely tune into them, you know? And that's really what Buddhi yoga is, the yoga of the intellect, which we have with Baba. But when I have that such a subtle connection, I come in front of a soul and I can know where they're at and how to respond to them. I can read them. That's the basis of successful relationships, such a subtle intellect. It's like the ultimate emotional intelligence. I can just read this person. That's what Baba does for us because his intellect is so subtle. And I can read through their face, through their vibrations, through everything, you know, what's going on and how to respond to them in a way that's perhaps uplifting and supportive in that way. So this divine intellect, this subtle intellect is driven by all relationships with one, God's directions. And I would say that really my intellect, that vessel, holds all of Baba's truth, not part, not half of what Baba's telling me and half what I think. Am I still driven by my own thinking, or have I surrendered that much that I really realize that Baba's a superior thinker to me? That's what really surrender is. But when I really do that, the clarity of my intellect, the clarity of my perception, the awareness of what to do at the right time, you know, it helps me. It's like you develop an intellect that knows how to navigate this iron aged, really challenging world we're all dealing with. And even when we come in front of all these variety of personalities, because of the subtlety that Baba's given me, I know, can see where they're at, what's going on, and how to respond. I remember Baba talking about this, that you become successful in relationships. How important is that in Brahman life, to be able to really know how to respond to all the different varieties of personalities? If I respond in the same way to everyone, it's not going to work very well. So the intellect is many things, isn't it? It's firstly the vessel. Secondly, the traveller that's always travelling and plugging in. And, you know, thirdly, the lens. You know, the lens and the different types of lenses. But the fourth thing which Baba and we often talk about, the intellect is the decision maker. And how important, in a way, where I arrive in life, what I'm experiencing in life, my happiness or my lack of happiness is all based on my decisions of the past. And what is that? That's my intellect. And when I think of it, when that mind that's like a screen and all the data, it goes up on the mind, and instantly there's data, there's a certain personality, they may be not so happy, there's a situation going on, there's something I have to do, there's this, all this data is there. I'm presented, my intellect is presented with the external data from the external world. But equally, my intellect is presented with my internal data, which is like my memory, which is like my mood, which is like my emotions. And almost I have 1/1000th of a second to really assess the external data, assess the internal data, and decide. And yet I would say that 1/1000th of a second is the most crucial part of my Brahman life. Because what I do is creating my destiny in a sense. How I behave, how I respond is in a sense creating my future. So how important is that instant moment that I receive all the data from life, I assess it, and then I decide. And that's why when I've really created a subtle intellect, a divine intellect that's really only influenced mainly by Shiv Baba, it's got the sort of the parameters of Srimat, and it's holding God's truth, then it's almost like I have this very subtle way of assessing the data and responding to the data. One of the things I really loved from Daddy Jenki, and I've really tried to do it more, I'm a little bit impulsive. I like to do things straight away. Who asked Daddy something and she said, wait and see? Who's had that experience? I've heard it so many times. I can't tell you, I've adopted that. And you sort of think I need to jump in and do something to resolve something, clear something, improve something. And sometimes you need to do that, but sometimes when you wait and see, it heals itself, it resolves itself, and a great outcome comes. I've really been amazed. And so it's almost like when my intellect is pulled out of the body conscious, the gross world, and it's more under Baba's influence and his directions, I start to have a quality of decision making, which is really going to create, you know, a very, very positive future for myself. And, you know, when I really think of this, the intellect, and to me, in a sense, it's the intellect that remembers God. And that's why the whole of this life, a life of purity, a life of study, is to strengthen my intellect to connect with God and stay with God. And to practice that even, not just when I sit to meditate, but as I move about, I pay attention to keep that subtle thread under the influence of one. So when I'm presented with these instant situations, these instant reactions from people, things that happen, I'm in a place, my intellect is prepared, it's subtle, and it can be more influenced by how Baba would respond to something than rather my old self and my old emotions. Of course, sometimes my old emotions kick in, I respond inappropriately. That will happen. But as long as I learn from it, because I've been, my experience of the last 2 years really has been around living in this world at this time, in the last few years of the cycle, and really the whole of this study is to keep my intellect with one. This is, we absorb the ocean of knowledge to keep the intellect accurately connected with the one who's ever pure and ever true. That's our study, fundamentally. And so in a way, incrementally, I have to keep building my intellect, strengthening my intellect. And that's where we do that some, we do that when we remember Baba. But as soon as I plug into an old memory, an old hurt, an old whatever it is, it's almost like I fill with power, I drain with power. I fill with power, I drain with power. I drain of power. And then I wonder why I'm not feeling that strong anymore. And I think that really years of following Baba's principles, years of remembering Baba, the intellect just gets so subtle to the point that in the golden age, I honestly feel we don't speak much. I think a lot of it is done telepathically. The intellect is so pure, so clean, so subtle, I can understand you without really, you know, needing to speak. But nowadays, what do? We sit down somewhere. That's why coffee shops have been invented, so people spend 5 hours unloading all their feelings. But, you know, once I remember we had silence in the center when I was very new in Gyan, and for 3 or 4 days, and I can tell you, there was one brother that was I was staying with. I was picking up everything. He said, in the end, he didn't need to speak because I could pick up his thoughts, what he wanted. And I really do feel that that's the subtlety of our intellect. So when we communicate in the golden age, it's not so much gross words, it's feelings. Your eyes, your face, your vibrations will communicate who you are, what you need, how you're feeling. And everything will be on that subtle level. Such a divine intellect, such a subtle intellect. And I even remember once Baba said something so sweet. He said, when there's a pure heart, a loving heart, it will create a divine intellect. And I really believe that when, you know, sometimes we might feel, well, my intellect's a bit simple, my intellect's a bit this, my intellect's a bit that. But really when there's true love for one, I think, you know, the gift of that is the intellect just becomes cleaner and cleaner and cleaner and more subtle. So the intellect is a really fascinating part of our anatomy and probably the most influential part because, you know, it's the intellect that receives the data from the mind. The intellect decisions really create all my sanskaras, and then eventually even the sanskaras start to influence and dominate the intellect. And now the intellect is filled with God's truth, and I'm now freeing myself from my old sanskaras. So I'm not sure when I'm supposed to finish, actually. Oh, okay, we can have some questions. I wasn't sure whether we finish at 12 or 12:30. Okay. So anyway, maybe we can have a couple of minutes of traffic control because it should emerge in a second. I'm looking at the clock. And then if anyone wants to ask something or make a comment or whatever, you're most welcome. We can have a little bit of time for questions. So thank you. I think there's a microphone coming. Does anyone want to ask a question and make a comment? Yes, Matthias, please. So everyone can hear, if you don't mind using the microphone, that would be great.
Yeah, but revenge comes, Baba touching the intellect. Then we heard also that Baba would not only touch your intellect, but also maybe service companions, so there would then be kind of natural agreement. And I wonder whether we come now in a situation where it's more and more difficult for people to understand maybe what your reasoning is or what your decision is based on, because they just see it completely differently. So maybe it will be a situation, or there will often be situations where people would want to know why, and maybe we can be often in a situation where we have to justify. And so maybe a few thoughts about that would be good. What's a good strategy in these situations?
You know, I think that... who's had the experience that if you try to reason with people, it just has no effect whatsoever? Because I think when the intellect is often either got a very strong idea or something. And you know, this is why feelings are more powerful than reason and rationale and convincing. You know, sometimes we really feel something's right and we try to convince people, they're not convinced at all. I really think that's why Baba emphasizes it's the feelings that even if someone disagrees, at least they feel close or love or respect. Because sometimes if, you know, look at our world, I feel as body consciousness, even the last 5 years, it's divided even double. You know, I feel 20 years ago, if people had a different idea from you, they'd think, okay, you think differently. 10 years ago, if you have a different idea, you dislike them. Now, if someone has a different idea, you hate them. You know, like, what? You think differently from me? I reject you. It's incredible. You know, there's just so polarizing. It's just the ultimate state of body consciousness. And I think that that's where, you know, feelings do the work. In other words, we remember the intellect connects with Baba. It's all like we live stream Baba and his vibrations into my mind. What I find is that that vibe sustains me. You can be 100% sustained whether you're on your own, with the family, wherever you are. It sustains the atmosphere, it influences the atmosphere, and it sustains the people around you. Honestly, we're all in places where our Lokic or alokic families are fluctuating, going through hard times, sometimes really hard times because of health, life and death issues and that sort of thing. What can we do? I think if the more my vibrations are elevated, it's almost like you create an environment to nurture. And you don't have to say much. To me, that's service these days. Often the more you speak, the more people can disagree. You know, once I was in Nepal in the year 2000, we had a big program in Nepal. And when we went, Daddyji went, and Nirvebhai. And the king of Nepal came. Was anyone there? Anyone here? Oh, Patricia was there. And you may remember that the king of Nepal never speaks publicly. He's just a presence, and everyone loves him. I thought, what a clever strategy. Because the more you say, the more people will disagree with you. So, you know, maybe we should have public talks, and we should just sit there. Really, you know, because it's like that. But when you were starting off saying touching the intellect, I remember Baba met one of the Australian brothers and he said to him, sit in the early morning hours with a plain intellect and Baba will touch it. And I've often thought about that because we are so, our intellect is so full of self-absorbed, I would say. You know, when you sit in meditation, I'm thinking what I need and what I need to change and what's going on in my life and how I feel. And I'm so self-absorbed in my story, my life, my world. I honestly think sometimes Baba comes in the early morning hours, says, "Hello, child," and I'm zzz. "Oh, you're busy, I'll go on to the next one." You know, you're occupied. We're so sort of absorbed. And really to sit without an agenda, really try to just prepare your intellect and see what comes. See if Baba fills it with something quite magical, quite unique. I've really, you know, sometimes had some really lovely insights when I'm not driven by my own thinking, my own life, my own story, how I feel, what's going on, what so-and-so said, what's, you know, that sort of intellect just filled with data. If it's plain, Baba can touch it. And, I think it's a really interesting thing. So, yeah, it's an interesting time. There's so many opinions out there, aren't there? There's so many strong opinions, and that's where I feel, you know, feelings have the great power. It's feelings that do the service, really. And when the feelings are there, people feel comfortable, then maybe they'll listen to us. I don't know whether that's what you are asking, but is there anyone else who would like to ask something, make a comment? Yes, please, you can come up actually, you don't have to wait, because...
Om Shanti, brother. My question is about the visualization during yoga, because there are many drills and all the experiences where we visualize ourselves in, five stages or different type of practices. What are your opinions on that, whether we should create or try to be creative or whether it should automatically come or how it is?
Yeah, I think, you know, visualization of the self and Baba and things is helpful initially. But it's sort of an initial framework to sort of help me move into a relationship and a connection with Baba. But after a while, I don't think it's necessary. It's like Baba is a thought away. Baba is present. I don't need to sort of put a visualization around this. I don't. Even though I know some people are sort of real thinkers and churners. Some people visualize a lot. Both are good. But I think eventually it's like I'm just remembering the lover of the soul, and it's almost like all the qualities naturally sort of absorb and, So it's so natural as I go along, the subtle thread, as I walk, as I move, as I talk, the subtle thread is not to people and behavior and what's going on out there so much, but there. And the subtle thread can be connected in a few directions. You know, you can be speaking to people, but still keep the subtle thread open to Baba, even when you're talking, even when you're doing things. That's, you know. And what I've been trying to do this time is I realized that if you just think, oh, I need to remember Baba, I should remember Baba during the day, you get to the end of the day and you realize you've hardly remembered Baba. And I think it's good to give yourself little challenges for activities so that when you eat your breakfast, think, okay, let me challenge myself. How long can I really keep the subtle thread with Baba? And then when I finish my breakfast and I go to wash up the plates, just that 5 minutes. And then the next 15 minutes if I have to go and get ready to go to work, as I go about that. So 10 minutes, 5 minutes, half an hour, I'm just challenging myself. what's my chart? What's influencing my intellect? So these little sort of bits, the more I do that, by the end of the day, you feel you're sort of, you're with Baba during the day. Otherwise, we have faith in Baba, but we can go hours and hours and hours where I've become, my mind has become absorbed in the external world, you know, or absorbed in other things. And then, you know, so I feel that it's just this, how can I put it, Baba is just the destination of my intellect. And the form of a point may be there, but I don't sort of visualize Baba with a point with red around it and all that sort of thing. Baba is a subtle sort of connection where my intellect lands. Am I making sense or not? Yeah. Because really, we use all these pictures and things to help give the framework to the intellect to understand. But eventually, we don't need any support. I remember Baba without music, without pictures, without, I don't need red lights, I don't need anything. I can remember Baba wherever I am. This is a true karma yogi. That's, you know? But initially, some of these things are useful. Yes, please come.
Om Shanti. It's not really a question, but it's an appreciation. I liked when you said that Srimad is a code of truth. Code of truth, I think this is what you said. And, you know, some psychologists, they say, we have two brains. One is the brain with which we think, we decipher, and the guts. They say, listen to your guts. This is what they say. They say that we have a second brain. Guts means intuition. The sixth sense. So maybe that intellect that you so well described, to me, it's like an intuitive power that you have. When it's aligned with Srimad, with that code of truth, then we get the right judgment. We do the right thing, and then everything flows very well. So this was a realization when you talk about Srimad being the code of truth. Mm. So this was an appreciation. Thank you.
Thank you. You know, I feel that the conscience lives in the intellect. And that's a fascinating thing, because why is it that we have this intuitive, we do something and immediately something tells me it's not right. I shouldn't be doing this. Because it's almost like the intellect has a memory of Srimad. You know? It has a memory. And sometimes I think our conscience, you know, in a body conscious world can give us the greatest pain. I think there's nothing more painful than if my conscience has truth sitting in it and I go against my truth. How can I respect myself? I can't. But in a soul-conscious way, our conscience really helps us because, you know, if, which we will be, our samskaras pull us to do something against my truth. You know, your conscience will sort of be like a red light. Be careful, be careful, be careful, you know. It warns you in a way. So my conscience is also like a part of the intellect. But isn't it fascinating that somehow we have an embedded intuition of what is right to a certain extent. And when we cross our values, our principles, then the conscience will sort of tell me, be careful. And if I don't listen and I do an action sometimes, then we feel incredibly guilty. And is there a worse feeling than guilt? I don't think guilty is. Guilt is one of the worst feelings. It's in a way, I disrespect myself. I go against my own truth. So I punish myself by feeling bad, that terrible feeling of guilt or shame or whatever it might be. Okay, so, oh, Carolyn, yes.
Thank you for this very clear explanation. Yesterday in a little group we had sharing about leadership and moving towards the final part, or being in the final part of the drama, and the seniors not there anymore so much. It's more about community and working together on a horizontal level, and maybe also the level of the intellects, of the collective intellects have enhanced to such an extent that we can work together better without having, without needing Daddy Junkie, for example, being there giving directions all the time. How, in your observation, understanding, does leadership look like when it's coming from a collective divine intellect?
Yes, it's I mean, it's really an interesting question, because Brahma Baba was such a quality soul that had such a divine intellect. Everyone accepted his decisions, his authority. He was like a complete authority. And then I think even Dadiji was like that until maybe, I don't know, the year 2000 or right like that. I think she also had such a divine intellect. And to me, the main thing of leadership is relationship. You know, managing is a whole different set of skills. You know, some people are brilliant managers. They can organize, plan, execute. But actually, leadership is all about connection with people, to me. And Dadiji was just a phenomenon in that. But since then, because the yagya is so huge, and I think the whole culture of the yagya has changed, so that rather than just have one leader or even in a center, yeah, it's a collective, and it's something we all, it's a learning for all of us, isn't it, to be the master and child. Because to work in a group effectively, I have to be quite humble. And it's such a great lesson for all of us, because I think collective leadership is so powerful when it's unity, really, and there's nothing more powerful than unity. But I have to be a master, I have to be courageous enough to express what I feel, even if it's different from others, but then become the child and go with the majority. Even once Baba said that to me in my early days, that, you know, that's the way to work as a master and a child. You offer, and you have a chance where everyone can offer their idea, but what the majority feel, to go in that way. And that, I think, builds unity, and that's what really Dadiji was a master at. And I remember once, we were in our centre in Melbourne. It's quite a long story and I won't go into the whole detail. But someone asked Dadiji how she ran the yagya, because you could imagine the personality of Brahma Baba, you know, the instrument of God. So both those two together, and then Dadiji was the next leader. And what she said is, when she has a major decision, on a day-to-day basis she would make decisions, but on a major decision she would consult all the main sisters and brothers, probably 15, 20. And what I remember is she said, if 75 or 80% agree, normally you'd just say, wow, that's fine, I'll go ahead. You know what she did? She said 75 or 80% would give me the green light. Those few, the 20% who weren't sure, she would wait until they came on board. You know? So in a sense, carrying everyone together, this is real leadership. Now, I'm making it sound a bit more simple than it is sometimes, because each intellect has its own perception of reality, like we've been talking about. But that's where I think feelings come in. If there's real, even though we have different ideas, if there's feelings of love and belonging, we move together, even though we're quite different. And to me, that's deep spirituality, when we can have different ideas, different approaches, express them, but, you know, allow people to think differently and be happy, but still remain close in the heart. That's real, the leadership of a group that's really required. That's where the vibrations and the feelings, I think, are so important, you know. And when you really think about it, it's the feelings you get from people that you really... You know, they say someone may tell you something, you'll forget it in a moment, but you never forget how they made you feel. You never forget how someone makes you feel, whether good or bad. And really when I see Daddy Prakashmini, that's what her whole leadership was about elevated vision and making people feel good. And when they felt good, they were so cooperative and supportive of the Yajna. But it's a huge lesson to learn how to work in teams and groups. And really, I think it's such a good lesson for self-transformation. Because no matter who we are, we have to let go our ideas somewhere sometimes, and that's healthy. It's so healthy. And you know, sometimes you may be passionate. This is something really good, but if others feel, most feel a certain way, you just have to, okay, fine. I think to be able to let go is such a sign of a subtle intellect and a, you know, divine personality. Let go what I think. Got so many wonderful tunes on our phones. Well, there's maybe time if there's one more question, otherwise we can finish with some meditation.
Charlie, brother, you were saying about the intuition, leadership, and there was also a thought about intuition. Once, in one small group, Daddy Kumarka was sharing that at night when she was sleeping, at about 2:30 in the morning, she had this feeling and she woke up and she felt Father Brahma standing next to her. And he said to her, Father Brahma, very soon the wheat prices and a few other things are going to go up the prices. Buy this much wheat, buy this much rice. And he very clearly mentioned, and she had this feeling, and she has accepted it, because Dadi Ji is Dadi Ji, and she has such enormous commands, enormous love and respect and trust. Everybody else has accepted that. Therefore, there is probably a lot more complexity about this, because even intellect runs along the lines of drama. And so when we are committed and surrendered, everything works, okay, isn't it, Charlie?
Yeah. See, that's an amazing story, isn't it? Even in such a practical way. Who wakes up and gets told by Baba what to buy and what to sell? Anybody? Pratibha? This was the wonder of Daddy G. You know what she used to do if she woke up at night? She wouldn't just go back to sleep. She'd sit up and meditate for 10 minutes and go back to sleep again. And just to keep that feeling of closeness going. She's wonderful. Okay, thank you, Chuck. So let's have a few minutes of something to mention.
Thank you, Brother Charlie. I think everyone enjoyed your sharing and many insightful things to really reflect on. Thank you, Shanti.
Thank you.